in an unusual turn of events, the SOD Show this week comes to you live from a wee little place called the Trinket Box. It's in Treen Hill in Lusk, and today the show is all about coffee.
The Sod Show. It'll grow on you. Join gardener Peter Donegan and not-so-green fingers Brian Green on Dublin City FM. Fridays, 3 p.m. The Sod Show. It'll grow on you. The Sod Show, Friday, 3 p.m, Dublin City FM.
Okay, so it's another good Friday. It's not obviously good Friday, but it's another great Friday to be outside, one might say, but this week we're taking a slightly different turn on it. As you would all know, listening, Brian is the big tea drinker. I would be the big coffee drinker. And I thought maybe we should just look a little bit behind the scenes. So there's a twofold story here. On the one hand, Two Spots is Dublin's newest coffee company. If you buy one of their bags, on the front of it actually says, hand roasted in Dublin. The other one says, produce of Ireland. Nice news story, and I'll get to that in a little while. But to backtrack to the very, very start, there are three people in my company. The first one is Sean. And Sean is going to explain to me just where and how on God's earth I managed to get beans into my home in the morning time. See, I've tried to grow coffee beans in Ireland. Didn't grow or go in any way whatsoever well for me. What's the behind the scenes bit plant-wise?
Well, it's pretty much it needs the tropical areas, and there's also like a difference in altitude range as well. Arabica is pretty much needs in between 900 to say 2,000 meters altitude, whereas Robusta would be 200 to 900 meters altitude.
When you say Arabica, we'd see that printed on the coffee bean bags that it's the Arabica bean or it's Arabica flavour. So it's obviously taken its name, silly as that may sound, people at home, from the name of the tree.
Yeah, well, pretty much like it's that's the group that the these trees, you know, come from. That's the and you know the Arabica, it also needs other different things like rainfall. Well, I suppose we do have a lot in Ireland, but you know it gets that. But it also needs dry seasons, at least like 3 months for Arabica, and a Robusta 1 to 2 months, which you probably wouldn't get in Ireland due to our climate.
How long does it take before we can start, or one could start harvesting beans from a coffee tree?
Well, pretty much. It could be anything from 5 to 9 months before it starts to harvest. Sorry, but as I said, the tree, once it needs, the tree has to be grown from 3 to 5 years first, before it actually is mature enough to start to harvest.
And how long can the trees keep growing for? I mean, are they like a great oak, or is it a bit like, you know, it'll go for 120 years?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I suppose they would have a lifespan in between 60 to 100 years. You know, there is trees out there to have grown over 100 years. After that, I think they're really finished, you know, so.
Okay. And I know from my days in Kildalton Horticultural College, there was a point at which apple trees were pruned. This is making it very Irish as versus, you know, a different entire hemisphere. But there was a point where obviously one had to pick the apple by hand. Is it the same thing done with the coffee beans? Are they pruned to a certain, are they kept to a certain height, or do they just naturally grow to a certain height?
Yeah, well, pretty much the Robusta trees would have to be pruned more so than the Arabica, you know, as they grow higher. But they are pruned to, say, in around 5 metres. So it's easier for the workers to pick the cherries off the tree, you know, the fruit from the tree.
You say cherries as versus bean. So I'm getting two pictures, because the cherry we know in Ireland is the red glacé type cherry that you put on top of a fairy cake. I've got a picture. Where's the bean come into this cherry thing?
Okay, well, so the bean, as the bean starts to grow, it grows as a seed, and then it comes on the tree after, say, the flower has come out. I'd say it probably takes about six months, I'd say, after flowering, for the group of cherries to grow. It grows as, like, similar to, like, a bunch of grapes. So Arabica would probably have about 20 grapes on its 20 cherries, sorry, not grapes, on its in its cluster, whereas Arabica would have maybe about 80 cherries in its cluster. And then so the seeds grow, and then it develops a pulp around the seed with the bean, pretty much. And then this, as it matures, the cherry is green first off. When it is ready to harvest, it turns a pinkish colour and then to a bright red colour. And then it can drop off the tree, and then that's when the tree is known to harvest.
So is the bean then contained within the cherry?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And then two beans, sorry. You can get some trees that are peabody, which is one bean, which is very rare to find, which would hold a lot of nutrients and coffee, you know, body inside that. But then pretty much it is then picked, you know, hand-picked by workers on the farms, and then it is gone into different processes then through the farmers. And one would be depulping, with the cherry would be depulped, and then the bean is taken out of the cherry.
We've got it now to the point, Julie, where we've literally gone from, you might say, life cycle. For those who did in intercert science, you would have done that pupa, adult, imago, butterfly life cycle thing. You remember drawing it out. We've now gone from seed to tree and back to seed, theoretically. What happens then?
Okay, so the cherries are harvested, and then they need the coffee beans are essentially the seed of a fruit. So the seed has to be removed from the fruit. Yeah. There's five main methods of sort of processing. There's a wet method, like washed, semi-washed, pulled natural, and then there's honeyed. So there's five different ways to do this. Green beans are then shipped to countries, so they can't ship it in fruit format because obviously all the fruit will rot on the seed, and that'll directly affect the taste of the coffee. The seeds are removed from the fruit, depending on resources available, really. If it's done at a large co-op, they will have a sort of machinery and the equipment to remove it, with washing it and with water. On a lot of smaller farms, then they would just be laid out to dry in the sun, and they would be raked or turned every few hours so that they don't ferment.
I like that kind of, it sounds more wrong term probably or possibly, but I like that more organic-y, naturally picture in my head of just leaving them out to dry.
Well, whichever method is used will impact directly on the taste of the coffee. So it depends on really what a roaster is looking for from their beans. So roasters would buy a whole range of beans that have been processed in a number of different ways. But after that point, they're packed in 50 or 60 kilogram bags and then shipped to the roasters worldwide.
Okay, to put that in context, folks, a bag of Sam Denigan's potatoes in Dunn Stores is 10 kilograms, so six times that. That's pretty much one big grainy kind of bag that
Hessian sack,
we would use them for wrapping root ball trees and holding their roots together. That's what we would use them for, or at least I would use them for.
Well, maybe we can give you some from the roastery next time after.
I'd love that. Sorry, from there, is it a silly question? But
it's shipped then. I mean, you can buy through brokers. Yeah. Many brokers will buy in green beans, or we can buy direct from farms. So it's a big journey, and we're at the beginning of it, but we hope to do wonderful things.
So Peter, how does one source green beans? You hardly go through the Yellow Pages.
No, we don't go through Yellow Pages. Because we're micro roasters, we're fairly new, we're hoping to start creating links with directly with farmers. I'm going to Thailand very shortly to visit a few farms and hopefully build up some relations and start sourcing beans directly from the farmers. And that way you can ensure the quality. You actually know what you're getting. If I do end up visiting farms, then I can be sure where the coffee's coming from. I can be sure that the farmers are getting a fair price.
I first came across Two Spots Coffee when I was in the Science Gallery in Dublin City Centre, which most people listening to this podcast would be fully aware of. How does the coffee shop in the Science Gallery end up involved in this story?
Well, I've been running the cafe in the Science Gallery since May 2010, and coffee consumption in Science Gallery Cafe is absolutely huge. So it was more or less came from sort of necessity. Although the passion was there for coffee, but then we started to look at cost, and the idea was born, we had a little chat with Gary, and I said to Gary, so what are you going to do about it? You're going to start roast your own coffee? He says, why not? And that was it, really.
Story.
It's in a world gone mad where you turn on the news and equally as fast as I turn it on, I kind of go, oh God, and I turn it back off. So it's a really positive story that you go.
It just started as an idea. At the moment, it's going to the direction where we're hoping to start wholesaling coffee here in Fianna. We're supplying certain cafes and restaurants around town. At the moment, we're supplying to, for example, Trinkerbox, where we just have an interview now. There's also a few other places. In the city centre, we supply, obviously, to Science Gallery, and then there's a lovely place on Bath Avenue called Farmer Brown's. There's also a place called Nelly's, and in the south side, we supply two wonderful restaurants. One is called Dally's, and the other one is Hartley's in Dunleary. It started as just an idea, developed to something bigger, and with help of Dublin City Enterprise Board, we're able to employ two people, and the company is growing.
Brian, I've got a lot to take in here. I think it's back to you for Song of the Week. I'm going to come back after this one and hopefully get back on to the roasting thing, because there's a bit where all of this ends up as compost, so that the garden journey isn't just entirely finished.
Yes, Peter, once again, I've got the short straw. I'm not in a coffee shop. I'm still smothering with this cold. I don't know if you can hear it at all, but I've got the short straw because I'm back in the studio. I never get to go anywhere, and I want to change in our contract here on the Sod Show, because you get to go to all the interesting places and I go to none. But you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm here drinking my tea and you're more a coffee man. I'm drinking my Lion's tea from a Lion's tea cup, which on the inside it says, make tea make a difference.
You drink your coffee and I sip my tea.
So you asked for Song of the Week and it's not Hazel O'Connor, but there isn't, I've scanned around and there isn't great songs about coffee. Now, people's love affair with the drink, you'd think that songwriters who might use it to stimulate themselves and stay alert and awake might write a great inspiring song about coffee. Not really. But we did come up with this gem from Supergrass, Coffee in the Pot.
The entire journey now to the point of Green Bean stage, and we're now back to the point at which it's in Dublin. Sean, what happens next is the question.
Pretty much, so when we get the shipment comes into our roastery, it's coming in, they're coming in different types of bags, sacks, as I can say. The sacks themselves, we even, I know my dad, I gave some to my dad before and he used them for flower pots. There's something that they can be used for if anybody is ever in a science gallery and wants some, they can ask Peter and nicely and maybe we can get them in an order. Pretty much when we get the beans then after that, we then would store the beans for a while until they need to be roasted. Storage is greatly important as well, that the beans have to be kept on, say, pallets, wooden pallets, so that the beans aren't on cold concrete floors because of dampness and, you know, the moisture content has to be right within the beans themselves before roasting. So then the beans are then taken and weighed, and we have a huge big roaster, which is a 12 kg roaster. The one that we have is called a drum roaster. The easy way to describe them to someone is probably like a huge big oven which rotates, but it's worked off gas and electricity as well. So what I would do is we would then weigh out the beans, you know, whatever beans I need, and then I would put them in the top of the roaster, and then we would heat the roaster to, say, 245 degrees, and then it would be dropped down into the roaster, and then the roasting process then starts. First off, you will have the drying of the beans themselves, where the beans dry out to, say, 150 degrees, maybe a bit under. And then the beans will then start to roast themselves. And then what happens is there's different reactions inside the beans. Like you have endothermic reactions and exothermic. What happens is the beans start to crack because a lot of heat will build up inside the beans, and then they crack. And then we ourselves would slow roast our beans then to a specific time in and around, say, 16 to 18 minutes.
How long does the entire process take before you throwing it into this? I've got a picture in my head like of a washing machine, and you put this big sack of beans into it and you just burn it to smithereens. How long does that process take?
No, well, first off, it's not a washing machine.
Oh, well, obviously, okay, you know, put some Daz Ultra in just for the crack. Yeah, no, I guess.
Okay, yeah, well, okay, so whenever it's put in, the beans have to be checked, constantly when they are inside the roaster to make sure you aren't burning them to smithereens, like you said. So I would be constantly checking the beans and making sure that I want to get the right roast profile that I want in that bean, and then it would probably take in around 16 to 18 minutes for our roasts. And then once it is roasted and it's ready to drop out, we drop them out then into a cooling bin, and then the beans are then cooled through an external extraction fan. Once that is done, we put them into containers, special containers that we have, and the beans are left sit to rest so that all the nutrients and oils can come out of them beans, because it takes, let's say, in between a day to two, 1 to 2 days for that to come out. They are not sent out then to the customers until after that, because we want to give fresh beans.
I was doing some, and one of the amazing facts I came up with was that in 1675, the King of England banned coffee houses, claiming they were places where people met to conspire against him. It's quite intriguing when you go looking at what it actually does, but the aftermath of what Sean has said seems to be that it then appears into the bag that I see in front of me on this table now.
Yeah, that's right. We pack in 250-gram retail packets, so we sell it either in whole bean form or in ground. And then we also, for our customers, our catering customers, we have a 1-kilogram bag.
Assuming you do what I do in the morning time, which is you put it into the grinder, it's then put into my cafetiere, I then make my coffee, I drink it. I walk straight at the back garden and I empty the contents of the entire cafetiere all over my hair bed, and I have been doing that since I moved to Ballybottle approximately 7-8 years ago. My sorrel seems to be fine, my parsley and chives are fine, my two olive trees are obviously slow grown, it's never going to have any drastic effect on them, but it's done no harm to my hair bed. Am I on the right track? Have I got it? Is there something more maybe that the coffee beans are giving my plants that I am unaware of?
Yeah, well, I mean, coffee grounds are long known to be, you know, great fertilizers. They add in acids and nitrogen and vitamins to your soil, so they will, you know, encourage the growth of some of your plants. Acid loving plants love coffee grounds.
So for those at home, listen, that would be azaleas, rhododendrons, etc., etc. But if my plants are not acid loving, does it have an effect on them?
Yeah, it can still be used, but you need to mix in a tablespoon of garden lime into like a 250-gram sample, mix it into that, and then put it on down on your beds. That'll be fine.
Oh, and that's how you make a fertilizer from? Okay, so the lime will obviously neutralize the pH. See, I understand the science behind this, but I've never actually done it before because me, being the Irish man that I am, I just throw it across the whole thing, but scattered across and left in the sun to dry again. It's not really had any kind of major detrimental effect. Is it? Did you ever get asked, as I suppose coffee makers, can we have your leftover grinds? Is that asked for?
Absolutely. I've worked in many cafes as well, and you know, we would bag it for certain customers who we know are into their gardening and just give it out for free. Obviously, we don't.
Is that a bit like asking the butcher for a few bones for the dogs kind of thing, like we used to do in the 1980s? The same thing, equivalent.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's an onus on us all to recycle where we can, and you know, and use what's around us, so it makes sense.
If in the science gallery, Peter, Mary McGinnity walked in off the street and asked for some coffee grinds, I mean, the offer of the Hessian bags is already there, but if somebody walked into the science gallery and asked for some coffee grinds for their apartment balcony garden, is that possible?
Absolutely no problem. We'd be delighted to do it. That happens every day. We do end up with, effectively for us, it's waste, but for someone else, it could be, you know, great thing to use in their garden. So I see absolutely no problem. Someone calls in, ask for Peter, we'll get you some coffee grounds.
Excellent. Just a note on that as well, if you are putting it onto your beds, just about two scoops per week, and then not too much coffee. If you put too much on, it will be too acidic and it might have detrimental effects. So don't dump the whole bag that you get from Peter in the science gallery.
Okay, so my one cafetiere pot is relatively
fine. Okay.
Are there any other amazing coffee grinds composting facts out there that I should be aware of?
Yeah, I was talking to a wonderful girl called Paulina from Cafe de Cuba recently, and she swears that it gets rid of cellulite. So what she does is she gets coffee grounds that have not been used, so fresh coffee, mixes it with a bit of baby oil and a bit of shower gel and a bit of water, and puts it onto dry skin. She swears that if I do this for 3 weeks, my cellulite will be gone. But I haven't. I have got to ask Peter for some grounds. Peter?
Oh, God. I have done some amazingly brilliant interviews in my time. Never have I finished on a note like that. Folks, so the people of Two Spots Coffee, they're twospotscoffee.ie if you want to check out more. To the ladies of the wonderful Trinket Box in Lusk, do come find it. A little bit hard to get to. I've noted it on Foursquare. Wonderful if you get here. An amazing cup of coffee. Lovely gift shop. And they've been absolutely wonderful, wonderful in allowing us to use their premises here for the purposes of this interview. Sometimes on the Sod Show, it isn't always direct gardening or purist gardening, but I did, and I am glad. I'm proud. I'm glad we took the time to research this one. Yep, that's it, folks. What can I say? Brian, back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Peter. Yeah, I'd say there are people driving around Dublin now listening to Dublin City 103.2 FM and dying for a coffee. That sound of a coffee shop is just wonderful. Back in the studio on the Sod Show, just a couple of things to tell you about before we go. Bloom, Ireland's biggest garden festival, is on again this year. What is it? Year number 5? I think it is. Bloom, Ireland's largest gardening, food and family event, will take place in the Phoenix Park, Dublin, during the June bank holiday weekend for 5 days from Thursday the 31st of May, that's voting day in the referendum, to Monday the 4th of June 2012. Bloom 2011 was the 5th year, so this will be the 6th, of the event, and to date has been the most successful yet. Bloom 2011 attracted almost 90,000 visitors to the 70-acre site at the visitor centre in the Phoenix Park, Dublin. Wow, nearly 90,000. I think they could smash that this year. That's May 31st to June 4th. Something else we shall tell you about is, and it's coming up sooner, the next event from Angela Jupe, the Tulip Festival, on the 21st of April 2012. It'll last for a whole week, Tulip Fest, celebrating in the floral paintings of the early 17th century. The tulip was one of the most desired of bulbs Fortunes were lost as men became insane with greed to obtain the most unusual tulip varieties, causing an economic bust on a scale unknown even to this day. Belfield House, Shinrone, Townhouse Garden, Birr, and Woodland Cottage, Birr, all in County Offaly, are hosting a celebration of these wonderful, vibrant bulbs which lend such scrumptious colour to our gardens in late spring. On Saturday, April 21st, enjoy brunch in Belfield and afternoon tea in Woodlands and a talk by the renowned Dutch tulip expert Robert Utten Boggart on the history and the development of the tulip. On Saturday, April 28th, we have brunch, tea and a botanical art workshop with our artist-in-resident Kathleen O'Connor from Roscrea, plus an exhibition and sale of garden and botanical art by selected artists. Tickets for the 21st and the 28th are €65 per person per day, and pre-booking is essential. The gardens will be open throughout the week, although formal events will take place on Saturdays only. Plants and bulbs in flower will be on sale in the gardens. Entry fee to the gardens is €5 per person. That's the 21st to the 28th in and around Birr, County Offaly. AngelaDupe.ie for more details. 103.2 Dublin City FM, The Sod Show. Another one has just whizzed past. I think it's time for a cup of coffee. See you next week at 3 p.m. Thanks, Peter. Take care. Bye-bye. How much longer would you be my